From Directions Media, this is Directions on the News for Wednesday, October 12th, 2011. Each week this podcast looks at news and trends related to all things location. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Somerville, Massachusetts.
And this is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
Last week, the world began mourning the loss of former Apple CEO and co-founder Steve Jobs. There were and will continue to be tributes and reminiscences over the coming months and years as the world tries to identify the impact he and his company have had on technology and on our lives. This week, we explore what the geospatial industry can learn from Steve Jobs and Apple. But first, a word from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by Esri. Join us for a free U.S. nationwide seminar to learn how to extend the reach of your GIS. Get more information and register today at esri.com/extendyourreach.
Now, the world has been trying to remember and recall and connect with everything that Steve Jobs has touched over the many years since Apple came on the scene. And I think it only fitting that we do so, but with a focus on geospatial. So what we're going to do today is share some of the things that we think our industry can learn from Apple and Steve Jobs. So Joe, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that Apple has taught the computing industry is about ease of use. Things that were before perhaps somewhat difficult, Apple seemed to make easy. The user interface on the Mac, the iPod, the iPhone, all of these inventions seem to really facilitate getting the user engaged, getting them to use the technology, not just glare at the technology and hope that something happens. They really did understand the user experience, and it's what allowed Jobs and company at Apple to essentially remake certain industries or get those very large industries like the music industry and like telephony thinking about more of the user experience and not just the technology. They were just shiny examples of having the user front and center in almost all respects.
Yeah, and so much of that, we attribute the UI to Jobs, and yet that really came from research that came before from Park, and really, a lot of that was standing on the shoulders of giants. That doesn't make the contribution any less so, but it really was an evolution of what had come before.
Yeah, most definitely, because some of the things that were developed in parallel, things that Microsoft was doing and things that Apple were doing, were kind of almost neck and neck. Somebody would have a leg up on the UI. Each company was playing off one another, which obviously really spurred innovation at the two organizations. It seemed that Apple kind of got the leg up on that and then really fostered that all the way through the inventions that they've done in the last few years with the iPod, the iPad, and the iPhone.
Yeah, it really became a real focus, and people began to turn to Apple specifically for that elegant UI. And I guess one way to measure it in today's terms is many people will say, I got my mom an iPad.
Right.
Right. And the reason is, mom can work that.
Well, and the form factor was huge. I mean, I think that Apple had won so many design awards in just manufacturing and form factor that they really were more than just a software company, as many people think of them. They were really a design company in so many ways.
Right, and that sort of brings me to my next point, which is, in addition to that ease of use, you got this elegance, and it was fun to work with these devices. I think the iPad, everybody wants to hold it, everybody wants to touch it, and you sort of can't keep yourself away. And that's a combination of that hardware footprint and the software and the way that it operates. And I think it's really hard to think of software in geospatial that's fun to play with. I mean, maybe you can think of one or two, but it doesn't have that draw that we've seen with Apple.
What we can specifically take away in the geospatial realm is the fact that Apple has remade mobility in such a way that it has brought much of the technology, much of the applications into the user's hands. And that's something I think we have always striven for in geospatial, because we have so many field force workers. We want to get the technology to people in the field. we have been always looking for these devices that were not so clunky, and as you said before, much more elegant. And Apple really has provided that, certainly with the iPad, that taking that device to the field, putting something that lightweight, that was a little bit larger than these 2-inch screens that you see on some of the GPS devices and the surveying equipment, boy, they really just put it right into your hands, made it lightweight, almost look like something you'd want to bring to the field, if for lack of a better description.
Right, and the challenge now is to take that elegant piece of hardware with its amazing interface and to make it weatherproof and make it tough enough to go out in the field and be dropped and stepped on and withstand the cold and so forth. And that part of it is what we need for our kind of heavy-duty field use. And whether Apple does that or whether a partner adds on to it to create that environment, I think it's going to happen.
Another thing in the mobility space, something that I kind of criticized Apple at the beginning when they launched the iPhone, was that it did not originally have a GPS chip in it. And people came back at me saying, well, you're missing the point. It can still be geolocated to the nearest cell tower. But I thought that they kind of missed that at the beginning. And yet, it didn't seem to matter. Version 2 had the GPS chip. The iPhone was no less popular, in fact, perhaps more so with every version. But in every sense, mobility has been shot out of a cannon with Apple.
Right, and my primary machine right now is my MacBook, and I'm looking to get a MacBook Air just because it is even lighter and even more easily mobile.
Yeah, those MacBook Airs are some truly elegant design technology.
And then a whole bunch of other companies followed along and made sort of comparable machines based on their own hardware. So
again,
leading the way. I think we need to look at Apple from a data standpoint too. And if you look at the first data issue that Apple tackled, it was music. How do we get people to buy music, and how can we deliver music for our hardware devices? And the answer was iTunes, and that sort of became the answer for, at least for a time, for everybody. That was the place you went. It had nearly all the music, the prices were good, and you could just get whatever you wanted. And there are many who argue that that kind of a solution really cut down on piracy and stealing of music. And I think we need something like that for geospatial data. And I don't mean to suggest that people are going out and stealing geospatial data per se, but that it's just very hard to find what you need and acquire it at a reasonable price and get it with a license that you understand. And if we could have an iTunes for geodata, that would be a great step forward.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And if there's one defining situation that would help geospatial technology get more into the mainstream, it is this issue of data. There is no marketplace for data. There have been several attempts, both by private companies and certainly with data.gov, to facilitate getting data into the hands of more people. It's just not there yet, but it really, somebody must be able to solve this problem soon, because it is hindering our progress in getting geospatial technology into more of the mainstream. I think it's one of the reasons why that in the business intelligence space, not everyone has quite adapted to using GIS, because they don't know about the data. It isn't intuitively easy to bring down a data set. And as I've mentioned before, I think in another podcast, I was at an Oracle Spatial Users Conference last year, and one of the questions in the audience was, how do I get that data? And I thought it was a very naive question, but I think it was indicative of some of the challenges that mainstream users have in dealing with data. So if somebody can remake an iData store for geospatial technology, we'd be much further ahead.
Right. And just to say, that clearly that is not easy, because if it were, somebody would have already done it. But it means a lot of negotiating with the folks who own the data, in the case of commercial data, and then gaining access to it from the government in all its different forms, and pricing it in some meaningful way. These are tricky things, and Apple did it for music, and others have followed, like Amazon, but we need to make that first huge step.
And obviously, geospatial data is not the music industry. It's such a small and tiny piece. And I do believe it is being tried. In particular, the satellite data companies are making an attempt to get that data into the mainstream. PBBI, with their GEOSC approach, is also trying to do that. So there it isn't, and certainly ArcGIS.com by Esri is trying to make that attempt. Everybody is trying it. Not sure that anybody has succeeded fully just yet.
The last thing that I would touch on that the geospatial industry can learn from Apple has to do with the persona of Steve Jobs. And one of the reasons I think that his death was covered so broadly in the media, it almost seemed like every media outlet had to at least mention it. One of the reasons for that may have been the fact that he was a media persona. He put himself in the spotlight. He spoke for the company. When he spoke, people listened, whether you're involved in his industry, whether you use his products or not. And that observation was made by Dan Kennedy at Northeastern University, because I was trying to figure out why it was that there was such wall-to-wall coverage of his passing. Now, having said that, he really had a voice that people would listen to about the state of consumer technology, and he would set the bar high. And while we have people in our industry who speak to us, we don't really have a voice that is listened to across the board, that everybody listens to. And that's something that I think could really help us out, too.
Remember that Jobs had come into his own during a time when there was another individual in the computer technology space, that being Bill Gates. And there was, I think, this back and forth between the two, this friendly competitiveness, sometimes not so friendly competitiveness, that spurred each company in their innovative products. And so whether you listen to Gates or whether you listen to Jobs, you wanted to know what the next big thing was, and those guys really were out there doing that. I think in the later years, after Gates stepped down at Microsoft, it almost propelled Jobs more into the role of visionary for the computer industry, and obviously other industries as well, like music and telephony. And so they were looking at Jobs in almost a different light after Gates kind of stepped into the background a little bit. But you did need that play off of both of those gentlemen, and we really don't have somebody in that. You could certainly put Jack Dangerman in somewhat of that role as being the oracle for geospatial technology.
And maybe at one time that might have made more sense if you had Jack Dangerman looking at it one way and Jim Medlock looking at it another way. But now, really, there is nobody sitting on the other side of the table. Or if there
that's right.
It be?
That's absolutely right. Essentially, we have a single voice out there. I really would have liked to have seen this at Intergraph after Medlock stepped down, is there was nobody there from Intergraph who was the number two player in the market for so long. Who was the voice of Intergraph? Who was going to be out there counteracting?
Who was the voice countering ESRI, whoever it was from whatever organization?
Correct. And Autodesk never stepped in. No one from Autodesk really stepped into that role. It would have been good to have some of this back and forth to push the technology further.
And it's interesting to note that even when Bill Gates went off to work on other things, Apple kept that conversation alive with those "I'm a Mac, I'm a PC" ads.
A stroke of genius, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
To characterize that.
And it kept that conversation going. And I think that's a really important thing, that even within our industry, we don't have a conversation going. We have very much as you suggested, one person, one organization speaking. The response has not yet gained that level of media savviness, maybe, to be the responder. Well, that's all the time we have. Before we go, our sponsor, ESRI. We'd like you to know that the ArcGIS for Home Use program makes ESRI software accessible to everyone at nominal cost. GIS professionals who use ArcGIS at work can have the same tools available to them for personal, non-commercial use. To learn more, visit esri.com/homeuse.
And from us here at Directions Magazine, we'd like to remind you about our two upcoming conferences, the Rocket City Geospatial Conference. The premier GIS conference in the southeastern United States will be held November 15th to 16th in Huntsville, Alabama. Please find more information at rocketcitygeospatial.com. And our call for presentations is now open for the 2012 Location Intelligence Conference that will be in Washington, D.C., and co-located next year with the Oracle Spatial Users Conference. More information can be found at locationintelligence.net.
If you'd like to comment on today's podcast, you can reach us at editors@directionsmag.com, or you can send us a tweet at directionsmag, or you can leave a comment where this podcast is hosted at Directions Magazine. Thanks for joining us, and be sure to tell a friend.